Sun, on the other hand, you know, they kind of got it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
There's another one that deserves mention, and that's Intel is actually selling a bundle of 1 year.
Yeah.
And they're on MI implementation. Probably might pass their test, but it's also worth noting that it's only a $60 option for the full-on remote, the RMM3, they call it the full-on remote toy.
Indeed. Indeed. I mean, you can with HP boxes, you can get their $500 ILO, and with Dell, you can get the same DRAC or whatever. But it's not $60. It's several hundred dollars, right?
Yeah, and actually, this I've been deploying a number of these. That it's the same thing. Actually, I have an open thing on the mailing list where the EM class port on the back is taken over, and somehow that gets screwed up.
I did want to address that exact issue, but I wanted to specifically talk about BGE, the Broadcom series, and kind of what's broken there. There are some workarounds for it, and we'll talk about that. Go ahead.
Well, maybe it would kind of help to enumerate where it's actually broken, but for instance, like you have the R200 up there.
Indeed. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm showing you the details that I'm permitted to show you guys. I have about two or three levels more of documentation that's NDA'd to Dell and HP, explaining to them why they're asking them for explanations of why they're bricking our machines with firmware updates.
Well, yeah, you have to kind of be careful with that. But like with the R710, minus the fact that they play games with NDA.
You have a 710. I didn't have
the
one to
HDMI
test.
Yeah. Connection, and that it cuts out when it first tries to configure the
file. I wanted to talk about that next, and that is how we segregate IPMI traffic from production traffic. We're actually putting in two separate data networks. There's a separate switch. There's a separate cable drop. There's separate. It's called a tool network, and that's only for the IPMI traffic. So you have to have at a minimum of two interfaces on every machine. But, I mean, I think that's pretty standard now. Any other questions? Okay. So, more or less, just kind of, this is kind of my first pass as a breakdown. Scroll back to the top here. So, I tested on four criteria. The last one, obviously, everybody fails, but, you know, whatever. The three main ones were, can I power it on, can I power it off, can I hard power it off? You know, you can emulate the toggling of the front power button with the IPMI power commands. And believe it or not, some of these machines did not work. You could not power on off. Sometimes when you issue an IPMI command, the BMC, the IPMI controller takes a nap for 5 or 10 minutes. It's kind of interesting. Pass-fail criteria for serial console redirection. This is where HP, in my opinion, really kind of, they figured out how to do it. On a Dell machine, there's actually like two logical serial ports. There's the one that's connected to the back of your machine, and then there's another one, a fake one, so to speak, that's your IPMI controller. So all of your machines, you would think, so you have a COM1 and you have a COM2, and you actually have to go into your OS and tell it to use COM2 if you want to use the IPMI controller. On some of the machines, about 1 in 10 of the models, I found that I could go into the BIOS and switch those around. I could have the IPMI controller be the logical COM1. On the other 9 out of 10 machines, that did not work. And it was fantastic. In HP land, there is only one COM port, one COM port to rule them all. And if you connect to the serial over LAN interface on the IPMI controller, whatever was being dumped to the physical RS-232 port is now being dumped to your IPMI connection, which is nifty. I kind of like that better. The final criteria, the third in the list, The sensor query is kind of an arbitrary thing where I just say, hey, dump all of your sensor data because I want to exercise a different set of instructions in you. It really isn't anything Yahoo's interested in. Yahoo is interested in, can I turn the machine on, can I turn the machine off, and can I get a serial console? And it's hit and miss. Maybe, you know, probably 60% of the machines actually do some kind of interesting things. I'll do take a look at kind of my generic what the heck is going on page. I set up just some general criteria, the IPMI tool commands that you can issue, and yet you still have to go into the BIOS and do this kind of nonsense. If you know vendors, can you please have them come up with a way to not do this anymore? That would be awesome.
So are you complaining about having to go into BIOS and set static IDs?
Correct.
So what static ID should they adopt with no prior information?
There's mechanisms in IPMI tool that I have available to me that allow me to set the IP address, right?
But DHCP is not checkable?
DHCP is probably the way that it's going to happen in Yahoo.
Well, I'm just trying to understand why this fails for something that would fail for every operating system on the planet, too.
Okay, backup. How does that even... That's not
so
even...
I'm guessing, what is your requirement for not being able to go into BIOS machine network settings?
If it's required... If I have to adjust a setting on the IPMI controller to get remote power on and off and the remote serial capabilities, then I should be able to do that setting with IPMI tool. And the reason why is because they want the system builders actually want to hook IPMI tool into the build process for a machine so they can execute a series of arbitrary commands, and then when they plug the machine in, woohoo, magic happens. Well, if you do DHCP, the IP address information is it'll just work.
Of course, that's assuming the DHCP server.
Somebody has to do the work of taking the MAC address of the BMC off of the label of the box and going over to a computer and entering it in somewhere. That has to happen. That's not what I'm complaining about. I'm complaining about having to, on one of the Dells, you have to toggle a bit that enables both the IPv4 stack and networking, which I don't... You have to turn both of these things on, which is confusing. Sure.
Or it's a security thing so that you don't have a BMC that's going to measure what's
working. This is true. Go ahead. Yeah, were you raising your hand?
Okay, I'll show you some commands I actually issue all the time off a box because it works with the machines I have.
Do you have these machines?
Over SOL.
Oh no! I'm gonna show. I'll show you. I mean, I've got a terminal window to show you that it does work.
No, but I mean, I've never had to issue anything in the BMC ROM menus for the ones that work. And
right.
In fact,
agreed.
Have to issue it with the IPMI tool.
John.
So are you fine with using the local system interface to the BMC on the box itself and then the IPMI tool over that? When you install the box and you load the IPMI KO driver and you get
sure.
the IPMI device and use an IPMI tool against that?
That is exactly what I want to do.
We do that with the lots of people at work. That's what we do for all of ours. And we just have it, you know, you have a foo-IPMI DNS. If it finds it, then it statically configures it and it all works.
What vendors do you use?
Supermicro.
Okay. So throwing Supermicro a bone here.
To the point of whether or not, I agree that the Dell case, if you do IPMI tool against the local BMC, not over the network,
yeah.
and say, set my IP source to static, that should turn it on. There's no reason for that not to turn it on.
I don't. Anyway, more questions over here.
Sorry to be just a bit.
No, go ahead.
I'm a little confused because I only use Supermicro. Are you saying that if you can boot this HP server and install your IPMI driver, run IPMI tool, say set an IP address,
mm-hmm.
and that doesn't work? Like, is that what the complaint is?
That is correct.
Okay.
That is absolutely what I'm saying. So yeah, if I with a running FreeBSD system, if I have a script fire off and go, oh, this is machine, you know, 75, I need to put this IP address into the BMC, it doesn't work. I know.
So they have, like, multiple interfaces that you specify it's using KCS before talking to the local
IPMI?
I don't think I do. Oh, I think the driver does.
The driver figures that out from the tables.
Oh,
yeah, so when we're loading FreeBSD 7 or 6.
We also use like ASUS bus and Supermicro, and it always works, and that's the way we configure after it comes up, and it figures out what IP it should have, and it just runs the command locally and it got set up.
It sounds like I'm working in a vacuum. No, I'm serious. No, it sounds like I'm working in a vacuum, and I don't necessarily have all of the bits.
There's lots of obscure commands in there that you sometimes have to run on one implementation that you don't on another, and you just have to find it by accident.
Yeah.
Like you can have like
this is true. Sometimes it's channel one, sometimes it's channel two.
That's the beauty of a standard.
Okay, I got about 2 more minutes here. More questions, or do you want me to go ahead? I believe that the operations folks are preferring to use OpenIPMI into IPMI tool, specifically because it's easier for them. I don't think it's as full featured, but I think for doing serial over LAN and for doing power on and off, which is what we want it to do, I think it's easier.
Also has more vendor extensions than IPMI tool.
Okay, this one, yeah, IPMI tool has LAN plus.
Like
those are the ones I ever used.
There's a Dell extension for it, for example, which will link the custom Dell.
Oh, sweet Jeebus, is there? Okay. Any other questions, real quick? Do a little dog and pony over here. Is that one? There we go. So this is one of my machines in my lab. This is kind of the things that's all the way at the bottom. Can you guys read that? And for the folks who've never used IPMI tool or any of the IPMI stuff, this is kind of the idea that I would want. You recognize the host name? This is kind of the idea in my mind, which is maybe I have a misconception of how this is supposed to work. I should be able to set all of this stuff locally to the machine. This stuff being, here's a serial over LAN parameters. For those of you who aren't familiar, you should be amused by the fact that I still have to set a bit rate on serial over LAN to some speed. It seems silly because this is all going over the network.
You need to set the serial speed of the virtual server.
Yeah, you need to have a serial speed for the interface to the machine.
But it
somewhere.
Actually runs a lot faster than the files.
Yeah, I mean. Well, what amuses me at Yahoo is watching them set all of these. Serial over LAN to 9600 for no reason whatsoever. I had discussions with it, but I mean that's what they're comfortable with, so that's fine. And then there you go. Now I'm talking to a machine over a serial connection over the network, and that is the end of my time. And thank you. Yes, John.
Have you played with using GDB over this?
I have not.
That's what I want to do.
Is it? Yeah?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Nice,
serious?
Yeah.
It's just a serial port to the OS, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of interesting. I mean, does that fold in any way whatsoever into network crash dumps? Because that would be something we'd be interested in.
It's still a remote serial port. It would just be from a KGDB. But you
okay.
Could single step a box over the network effectively.
Crash dumps are the serial
port. It should just work. Actually, I can't. I mean. You know, I think I don't even think I've tried to panic a machine over this. So I'm go on then. Hold on.
It's just like a server port.
I wonder if Philo's logging in.
The only thing you can do is if whatever reason you're running in Spain, you're going
to know. Just
probably
rates.
Ah.
1204.
All right, fine. Here we go.
So you might have DDB.
No, he's got an extra one.
What is it?
There's a one in
the KGB.
Yeah. Watch. Your ability to type decreases with the number of people that are actually looking at you.
Debug.kdb.enter
equals one.
That one?
Yeah,
that one.
What could possibly happen?
I hope you don't like that machine.
It's a Tesla machine. It gets reinstalled all the time.
There you go. So, stuff, things, and whatnot. There you go. I'm going to get out of the way so Alexander can talk to you guys about CAM ATA. Thank you very much.
One, two, three. Oh.
Yep.
So, all of you touched ATA4, know all its strong and weak sides. So it was worked for a long time, for many years, served legacy ATA controllers, but now it can't handle many things, such as NCQ, port multipliers, common queuing, other stuff, have quite weak error recovery, and so on. So it was taken decision to move to CAM, which already has some of these problems solved initially, such as common queuing, such as fair common scheduling, proper state machines present there, which allow to implement error recovery and different other stuff. So together with Scott Long, we started this project. Scott implemented separation or between different transport layers inside CAM. So previously it handled only SCSI. Scott virtualized that part, and that allows me to implement ATA transport to handle ATA buses. Also was added new CCB request to CAM, XPT ATA IO, which allows to execute ATA commands to devices. And we were implemented new transport using it and new peripheral driver, ADA, to talk ATA disks. Here's resulted CAM view, so we can see another transport. We can see the ADA driver. PMP driver is port multiplier driver. It's part of ATA transport. And here we can see set of ATA and SATA drivers. So this ATA is in some form legacy ATA stack. Some part of it I tell later. And here three new, completely new drivers which provide more functions for specific hardware. HCI driver is most commonly known because it's most widely used. It provides access to serial ATA devices on respective controllers, both disk and ATAPI. It supports all or most SATA features, such as command queuing, such as port multipliers. Recent controllers implement FIS-based switching on port multipliers, which allows several devices work together at the same time. It implements message signal interrupts and many, many other things. Power management, which is important for laptops, which one of ways to reduce power consumptions. Another driver is MVS. It's a driver for several series of Marvel controllers. It also implements a like set of features. It's somewhat different inside, but for user, they are quite alike. So also in CQ, port multipliers, FIS-based switching, and so on. And another driver is for silicon image chips, quite widespread, mostly entry-level chips of last two, 31, 32, and 31, 35, 31. It's PCIe-based, and one quite good and fast chip, 3124, which unluckily only PCIe-X. But it's really fast and quite reliable, support port multipliers. All of these chips support FIS-based switching and CQ and so on. Quite good series as for me, but only exists as SATA 2. It wasn't updated to SATA 3 as HCI. So, and the most specific part, it's refactored all ATA driver. So to handle legacy controllers, we still need to use it, but it was refactored to drop all extra things. So if we look on its design, there is now new kernel options, named ATA underscore CAM, which cuts ATA driver in half and uses only lower parts, which relates to the controller handling. All that above, all peripheral drivers, ATA disk, ATA ATAPI CD and ATAPI CAM and everything else is deprecated and no more used. And instead, all requests go into CAM. So, as I said, in 9 current, it's default configuration now. So here we can see what options should be present in kernel. So you can expect all CAM options. And also you can see HCI, ATA, ATA CAM, MBS, and SIS drivers. So old code wasn't removed from 9 current. So if somebody wants, all kernel configuration could be reverted, and you can always get back. But I hope it won't happen. So if somebody will notice any problem, please report. I am ready to debug it. But so far, it's going quite nice. And I hope it will stay same for 9.0 release. In 8 stable, all the same code present. So many people using this code already who not using are welcome. So all you need to is a built new kernel, or if you are going to use new drivers, you can just load them as modules. For 7 stable, this code wasn't merged, but there is a branch in SVN project GRAID 7 where all code merged from here. So it's quite fresh and functional, stable, same as all everything else. So this implementation in many cases works more reliable than previous. Different common timeouts and so on. It recovers quite nice. It handles hot plug and both hot plug on host ports and port multiplier ports. So those who are using kernel with a lot of modules, most of stuff except options ATA CAM could be loaded as modules. So you can load module CAM for all CAM parts. You can load modules HCI, SIS, MVS for them. And ATA you can load as before. So you can load ATA and then ATA PCI, ATA Intel, and so on, other parts which you need in your specific case. So as soon as we are moving to CAM, all legacy APIs are not applicable anymore, so here's a new set of control commands equivalents. So instead, most of ATA control operations, there's respective CAM control operations, except operating with ATA RAID stuff. There's new command GRAID. I'll touch it a bit later. Device names also have changed because now we are not using one more copies of ATAPI peripherals. So CD, DA, SA devices are known. Device AD now migrates to ADA. And one of reasons for it, because name, we can't have legacy device numbering, device unit numbers, which because new conditions when on single SATA port could be up to 15 devices with port multiplier, it just won't fit into that numbering. And intersect with names also not good, so names were changed and unit numbers were changed. But to simplify migration, there are symbolic links created inside devfs to reflect this change, and if you are using device names in FSTUB, it should not be a problem. So after reboot, the file system should be still mounted. But other tools like SmartMon tools should be redirected to new devices. All support already present for half a year at least. So how it looks like, maybe probably already seen. So first is CAM control dev list. We can see several devices, including port multiplier, and several devices on port multiplier. You may see SCBus1 includes 3 devices and multiplier. Below is part of the mask showing ADA and CD devices in quite CAM fashion. Yeah, can control identify looks very like to ATA control cap. So as soon as new implementation supports NCQ, we can see up to double performance boost. It's one of most visible differences and one of significant reasons to migrate. Here's another example using port multipliers. So yellow line is just four disks connected to separated ports, and purple line is a same disk connected to four ports of port multiplier on properly supporting adapter with phase-based switching. As you can see, performance degradation, it's not so big and goes only after queue depth on host card was exhausted. So 32 tags, it's a limit for SATA. So as soon as ATA rate heavily tied to legacy ATA implementation, it's going to be deprecated. Instead, together with Warner Losch, we implemented new geo module rate class, and which implements software rates for a different based BIOS setup, BIOS based rate setups. So it consists of three parts, or kernel part, core part, which implements basic functionality, interoperation with geom, basic functions, transformation part, which implemented different rate levels. So we support all of that ATA rate for supported and even more. So rate 1, 0, 1E, 10 single disks and concatenations. For and third part, it's metadata modules which support different metadata formats. So it's now support most of modern existing formats such as Intel, Gmicron, NVIDIA, Promise, and Silicon Image. There are plans to implement some more, such as Adaptec DDF and so on, but they're a bit use it not so often. If somebody wants to help with some specific formats, are always welcome. So, for example, for VI, I just don't have hardware to play with it. At this moment, Geom RAID module is not loaded automatically, but those who I want can load it as module without rebuilding kernel. So that's it. If somebody has questions.
Yeah. It's kind of unfortunate that if for a direct access device, you can have a SATA disk and it'll either show up as DA or ADA, depending on whether your controller happens to understand SAS or not. It could even be direct tapping SATA to like an MPS controller.
No, it, a controller which reported SDA inside it implements some translation of ATA to SCSI.
Sure, but I mean, as an end user, I take a SATA disk, I stick it in there, and it shows up as a DA device. So does that really mean that it's SCSI? I mean, I'm just saying from an end user perspective. So it just seems kind of unfortunate that direct attached storage isn't just DA. And especially since we're changing the ATA naming convention, to my mind, it seems like it would be really nice to just merge them. So you'd use the exact same tools, regardless of whether it was SATA or ATA or...
To do it, we should implement some protocol translation on a level below CAM. So it was one of possible ways, but it requires some state machine on that level to implement different management stuff, because sometimes we may need to use several, execute several commands instead of one and opposite, and to handle error recovery there. But legacy ATA4 just had no any reasonable state machine to do it. So for that reason...
I guess I don't understand what the state machine is. I'm just saying as a user, if I want to say, I don't know, disk info or CAM control or whatever, that I would always talk to my direct access disk as DA blah.
But in...
So from the user's point of view, they don't care how it works underneath.
That's right.
They just want to be called the same thing.
Right. So, I mean, in what scenarios does naming it ADA versus DA become a problem?
Because they're using different common protocols and different drivers in CAM. So.
No, no, I'm saying if your ADA driver was able to just export it to userland as DA instead of ADA, what would break?
No, in CAM you should track a common unit number in.
Sure, sure. Assuming that was fixed, that regardless of whether it was coming from a SCSI controller or an ATA controller or something else, they all shared the same unit number space, and they were all named DA. What in user land would break?
No, at this moment, only dependence I know is that smartphone tools uses name to identify a way to operate to talk to device. So as it will use ATA commands or it will use SCSI commands.
Okay, so you could do like a path inquiry. Something like that to figure out whether transport were SATA or something else.
No, actually, I don't really like situation when two different drivers use same name because it sometimes it makes easier for user, but it makes it difficult other things for debugging and other stuff.
So.
No, but when user receives a problem, he contacts to developer, and then interesting things begin.
Tell you what bus it's. We did actually have several. All the PCI bridge drivers. We have like 10 different PCI bridge drivers, and they all say PCIB.
Exactly. Because they all behave the same.
Yeah.
It's the behavior that's important.
Yeah. So I guess the reason I'm bringing up the question is that we're about to change the naming convention. So does it make sense to just merge them and be done?
Because you could use UNR, the unit number stuff, to fix the fact that DA and ADA share a number space trivial. Without having to put them all on
new bus
or anything
like that. As people tell, so it will. So you're also a CAM guy, so.
Well, I'm just asking the general question. I mean, do we think that's the right decision? I think it's the right decision, but that's just me, right? So.
Do both the TAPI and SCSI CD-ROMs both show as CDX now? Are there no more ACD devices?
They are both using SCSI command set. So it's effectively the same driver.
But from a user perspective, that makes it even more.
Can you show the slide that you had before with the names?
Before what?
Way back at the beginning, I think.
You had the names.
There we go. Oh.
Yep.
I wish I had it again.
Other way.
Right. There we go.
No, this device is only device which is not SCSI. It uses own command set, ATA command set, and so it's.
But a user doesn't care about that because most of the users don't really care what command set the disk uses.
Now there is one place it is convenient, which is if you have an ATA boot drive, for instance, in a machine that has 40 odd SAS disks, it's nice to be able to pick it out and say, okay, that's the boot device, and DA everything else involved.
But our new installer uses labels, right?
Labels.
Which is what it should be doing
anyway.
There's
never circumstances where it goes away, sure. But this one thing is you don't have to guess what the
truth is. Labels are more reliable than guessing.
Guessing is not a strategy.
Smart control is perfectly capable of figuring out whether a device is an ATA or SCSI, even an ATA.
Well, just an idea. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'd be happy to help with this in the hacker lounge later tonight.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's discuss. Other questions? No? Thank you.
Projector really didn't like my MacBook earlier, so I'm going to try bringing slides up here. No, I don't want the accessibility set. No, go away. Okay, so thank you all for coming. Before I start, I just want to say that what I'm about to talk about is some pre-publication research. So we are very, very happy to talk about this with the community, but we would appreciate it if you didn't, you know, record videos and post them to YouTube. Ah, where is it being recorded currently? Up there, I bet. No?
Turn the mic off.
Okay.
Yeah, if you turn the mic off,